Bookers, come on down. You have stumbled upon a pot of word salad at the bottom of a sometimes inappropriate rainbow. At the controls are indie authors Cintra Sullivan, Kay Banning Kellum, and David Atherton Cooper. I'd like to say they know what they're doing, however, as the official voiceover guy, I have sworn an oath of fealty. Welcome to the What the Book podcast, where scripts and pants are optional.
Hey, bookers, welcome to episode, God, what are we, 12? Is this 11 or 12? Of course, I have David Atherton and Cooper. Hi, David.
Hey there, episode 12 it
is. Episode 12, and Kay Banning Kellum. Hi, Caleb.
Hey, happy 12.
Number 12, can you believe it? We're an even dozen. We're the dirty dozen now, officially.
I've been dirty since day one.
This is true. So today, bookies, we are talking about knowing your self-worth. Knowing what you're worth as an author is super imperative to how you will progress forth in your writing career. If you don't value yourself, nobody else will value you either. It's kind of like loving yourself. How can you expect somebody to love you if you don't love you too? Finding your self-worth is imperative as far as I'm concerned with publishing, with progressing forward in your career. Of course, now, when we talk about publishing, you've got your traditional method, which, you write a script, you find an agent, you pitch to the agent, if they like you, will then take your book to publishing companies and yay, off you go. Of course, if you want to self-publish, you've got subsidy publishers, vanity publishers, which we will talk about a little bit, self-publishing, which I primarily do, and of course, print on demand. They're pretty much the four different ways you'll self-publish your book. But knowing your self-worth, Caleb, where do you want to go with this? You start me off.
I'm going to tell you this. I believe that knowing your self-worth is, I think you're going to find that in exploring and developing your own self-awareness, because that is one of those things that you can shoot yourself in a foot if you go in too hot. And of course, you can let yourself be drained down to nothing but a husk if you never stand up and realize it. I think there comes a time when you will outgrow where you are and you'll feel it like a moth coming out the cocoon. When I first started writing, I posted my portfolio online. Anybody could read my stuff. And I felt like I did good if I got a comment, And then one day I realized, I'm putting in a ton of effort to make these stories great. And I'm comparing myself to people who are published. So why am I just writing for the comment section? And that's when I realized it wasn't because I felt like I was too good to remember where I came from anymore, but it was because I realized that I had simply outgrown it. It's just something you feel when you don't get that same degree of satisfaction anymore. And you realize that there are new plateaus to climb to. And knowing your worth is taking that step and doing it and not saying, well, you know what, I've been writing just on, Wattpad or whatever. Why should I change it? Well, because you know that you deserve better. You know that your effort balances to more.
So then that's what's the phrase I'm thinking of is not because, some people get a little bit worried that they're being viewed as egotistical or viewed as being too big for their own boots. Oh, God, that sounds like my mum. Oh, you're too big for your own boots. Not that I ever was, but, it's that sort of phrase that was brought up, knowing that it's not a matter of being too big for your own boots. It's a matter of knowing that you've filled those boots and you need a bigger size. So you have to be able to take that extra step, as you said, and step up.
Right. David, and as far as – oh, sorry.
No, you're right. Go on.
I was just going to say, to kind of look at the other side of the coin on that, you talked about the egotism side, people who – to me, that is a matter of people who try to run before they can walk or they try to walk before they can crawl. And that's a little bit harder to get a bead on sometimes, But I think a lot of it just comes from really look, compare yourself to your peers or people who you think are your peers. Look at what plateau do you believe that you're on, and then see if you stack up the people who are there. If all you've done is written, you know, short stories on the internet, you've never had to query, you've never had to write to Mark, you don't understand, you know, you don't know anything about the behind, then that's, you kind of know that maybe you need to focus on yourself more than start saying, hey bitches, I'm here. No, that's my fault.
This is also something, and I'm going to pass to David in a minute, but it's something that I was just yakking about on Twitter earlier, is about comparing is fine. Competing is not fine. I don't compete. I will never compete. I don't compete with other authors, be them, you know, EJ Dorf. I don't care how big an author you are. I will not compete with you. I don't care how small an author you are. Still not competing with you. I will stand beside you. We will write together. No problem. I will compare, but I will not compete. They are very different things. David?
I think you're wrong. Ooh. I always compete.
Oh, David, but I'm wrong. Oh, look, I have to adjust myself in the car. Let's go. All right, I'm ready.
Nice girls don't do that in public.
I'm not nice.
We know. So I would say 100%, always compete, yeah, but only against yourself. So I do agree. There's no point trying to compete against somebody else, because we're writing, we're pulling things out of our own heads and getting them down on the page. And what I write and what you write and what Caleb writes and what everyone writes is absolutely valid. And the best and the most right thing they could do at that time. There's no way to compete against that. But I would always try and compete against myself. What I write should be, to me, in my impression, better or at least as good as the last thing I wrote. So I would always compete against me. And so I picked up a quote ages ago, which was, you know, aspire to be your heroes, but accept where you are. So back to what Caleb was saying. Everything I write, I wish was something that someone could read and compare me to Neil Gaiman or Raymond Feist or one of the biggies. And that's what I have in mind when I'm writing. I want it to be the best it can be. But hey, my grammar's not tremendous. I've not had to go through the process of trying to pitch and query yet. I have no idea if a publisher would take my stuff on. But I always want to be aspirationally that level that is the plateau beyond where I'm writing right now. And so I would say I'm always competing against me.
See, I don't. I literally 5 minutes ago was having this debate with CE Rob, I do believe it is. And I said that I will, he said, I compete with myself from yesterday. And I went, I don't. I will not compete with myself. I will only learn from myself yesterday and to make tomorrow a better day. I don't. Competitive brings frustration, brings disappointment. I don't want that. I want comparing to bring learning, to bring understanding and development within myself. Of course, it's just probably, and he said, well, that's semantics. And I go, it probably is, but, you know, whatever.
But hey, whatever works for you, and semantics are important. I think we're probably both saying, in fact,
exactly,
the same thing.
That's what he was saying.
It is all about developing yourself and trying to be the best that you can be at whatever you do, and that gives a sense of knowing your own worth.
Absolutely.
That then you can take to the outside world and get them to give you an opinion on what they think your that piece of work is worth. Sure, that's the other side of the process.
Can I quickly throw my two cents in on David's response about not competing with yourself or competing with yourself into that? So Centra, you said you absolutely will not compete. David, you said you absolutely will compete, but compete against yourself and things like that. Now, I'm going to throw in a third way of looking at it, because I can't say that either you're wrong, because that's your personal opinion. If it's right for you, it's right. Now, here's the Caban and Kellum way. I don't think that we can compete against each other because I mean, it's just one of those things. Like, how do you win? What wins? Like, if I'm competing against you, what happens? I sell more books than you and I win? No, I mean, and we're not competing against other writers because it's the same thing. What we're competing for is space in the market. We are competing for a very, very, very small shred of opportunity to catch reader's eye and say, I'm going to buy your book instead of your book. And that is where the competition is. And it's a strange kind of competition because it's not me trying to knock David down and get to a finish line before him. It's more like we're all in a very crowded convention center and everybody's talking at the top of their lungs. And so are we. And we're all just shouting, look at me, look at me, look at me. And if we're lucky, we can network with some friends. We can get some people together who might boost us up on their shoulders just high enough to where we, when we're screaming, look at me, that reader looks up and sees us. At the end of the day, we are just competing for space and time and attention from the reader because there is no shortage of books out there, especially with indie publishing now. And that to me is the nature of the competition.
Look, I agree with you completely. Although, you know, I will say that there are readers, there are so many readers out there, and every author is a reader. I'm a reader. I'm a writer. I read as much as I write. So I agree that that's what the competition sits further towards than competing against each other as authors. There's so many out there. And it's when, like, if you're choosing to self-publish and you choose the straight self-publishing model, which is very popular, and can be, you know, you literally are an independent sole trader. You know, you pay for your own editing, you pay for your own cover design, you pay for your own marketing, you pay for your own printing, you pay for everything. You own your own business, you run it like that. You pay your taxes, people pay your taxes. Anyway, that's your self-publishing route. And that works really well if you have an established fan base, or you know, you've got time sensitive manuscripts where perhaps you don't want to sit exactly to a deadline, and you know, you want to take a little bit of your time and whatever else. And self-publishing, you have 100% control over your own issues and can plot it at your own speed. And Caleb, you're fully self-published, aren't you?
I am, yes, ma'am.
Yes, so the same as me. And David yet to decide where he's going with this. But you
I have a plan.
I love it. So the other problem with self-publishing is that you can run across Vanity Press. Now, if you look up a Vanity Press, it says you pay for all services but own the book and receive all the profits. Oh, fucking shit, people. Sorry, I'm just... Vanity Presses to me let me take back my bull fucking shit part, okay, because they're not all total scammers. There are a very small minority which make the rest of them look bad. There are a lot out there that will simply take your money and you end up with way out of pocket having to pay for everything and seeing very little profit out of it. There are some boutique publishers which are fantastic and they work with you in the marketing process and the editing and all of that. They've got, you know, connections that you can access. So you're almost self-publishing with more help. Fantastic. Really, really good ways to go if you need a little bit more
direction. That sounds almost like hiring a coach or a mentor almost, and you're paying for their coaching services as they help you along.
Exactly.
You're not just paying for them to poof you a book into existence.
Exactly. And I mean, they're great and they're very helpful. You're paying still everything because that's the nature of the beast, but you're going to see profit out of that. There are some vanity presses that, you know, there's one that, they approach me quite often and it's a straight up $5,000 fee to
$5,000.
And that's you, and that's, sorry, that's UK, that's pound, £5,000. I know. And I'm just like, when am I going to see any profit out of this? How much are you expecting to sell my book to make me get a profit out of this £5,000? And I mean, and they're very quick to take it. They're like, oh, bring it to me.
Well, absolutely.
We love your book.
They're going to take the money. Shit, yeah. They ain't going to turn down that money. So here's the question. Now, they say you get 100% of the profits.
No.
So let's say you pay one of these people, right? Mm. And I'm going to pretend, I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I'm going to pretend to be a naive dumbass who just wrote something that I feel is the next big thing. And I want to get it on a shelf, and I don't want to wait because I'm ready to go. So I am going through these vanity things and break down what I would get. So I got the money to pay what they want. Let's say I find a cheap. So obviously they cover what? What exactly do they promise the people that they're going to do? I'm picturing a book cover. I feel like they take care of the stuff that is scary for new writers.
Are you talking about the one that I was dealing with or the one that approached me?
I'm talking about the crooked ones in general.
Okay, well, this one would take my manuscript. They would fully edit it. They would fully do the cover. They would print it out. It would be distributed, according to them, worldwide, both in print and ebook. And I would see 30% of all sales.
So, and they look at it now, you almost think that they would actually have a good product if they just promoted themselves as an accessible publishing house to say, hey, instead of spending, you know, $5,000 on an editor and then another $1,500 on a book cover designer and then another, we'll get you ready to go. See, I think that would be a good service, you know, and but I think it seems to me that the scam end of it starts coming in the distribution. They're getting your money and they're giving you, I guess, they provide you what they promise as far as the book cover is going to be what you ask for. I don't know. That sounds very, very comprehensive.
The book cover would be to market. It wouldn't necessarily be what you wanted it to be. It would be to give you the market desired for what they think.
So if it's a romance novel, they're going to put a shirtless Fabio on there and standing in front of a sailing ship in the back while, you know, okay, I gotcha.
Exactly. Now, if you look at, say, we put it up on our I put it up on my Twitter feed, and I had some comments from people. C. Pels, we had her on. Was it last week's erotic?
We did.
Oh yes, that episode.
I love C. Pels. She's delicious.
All right, am I going on What the Book, or am I going on your Twitter to find these wonderful?
This was on mine. This was on mine, and she said, "Real agents do not ask the author for money." True. Absolutely true.
100%. Absolutely.
Not ask you for a cent ever. Listen to that, bookers. Please, agents will not ask you for money ever. They're gonna make money
off their commission. Yeah.
Yeah, they make money off you when they sell you, well, not you, your books, whatever. They do not ask you for money. Please, never give up. It just doesn't happen. So if they do, red flag it. Walk away. Every time. Real publishing houses do not ask money. Do not ask the author for money. Money can be limited, though it may be, and supposed to flow to the author, not from the author. Yeah, see, if you're looking at publishing houses, yes. If I went to, you know, if I was pitching to Hache or, you know, Mills and Boone or Penguin or Simon and Schuster or one of the biggies, I'm not going to put out a cent. If they want my book, which please, Simon and Schuster, I have a book for you. Anyway,
I have something published by them.
Do you?
I have Simon and Schuster credits. Oh, it's in an anthology that was published through them. So one of my stories made it through the Simon and Schuster.
Brilliant. I'd love Simon and Schuster, but you can't approach them without an agent. They do not take unsolicited manuscripts. So, you know, you've got to find an agent first who believes in your manuscript so then they can go pitch to these big five. If I'm going to go, you know, mainstream publishing, I'm only going to go with the big five. You know, Otherwise, I can do it myself. Because, I mean, and I mean, I will say something. I am like 15 books into this. I know the way it works. I'm not on my first one where it's very daunting, and I could understand going for, you know, more of the boutique publishers that will help you along the way. I'm 15 books into it. There's nothing that they can show me that I don't already know. So I'm probably coming at that particular one from a different angle. What about you, David? Which angle would you come at it? Seeing that you haven't published yet, what's your plan when you do?
So, as you know, I butterfly around. So I have several works in progress. One is, in my opinion, nothing that a traditional publishing house would touch from an unknown, unpublished author. It's too big. It's too long. It will turn into a multi-book series if I ever finish writing the thing. So whilst I almost certainly will end up pitching that concept to a publishing house, I want to be building up a portfolio of work and see a little bit of cash coming in, thank you, before I start. So I've got two or three shorter, more manageable, straightforward, and fairly accessible, I hope, pieces that are getting close to ready for beta readers to help me fine-tune, which I will probably indie publish and get out there, maybe through Amazon, maybe through one of the other platforms, I don't know, and try and build up some level of reader engagement following as a backup for then finally being able to maybe traditionally publish the epic. And plan B on the epic is if I've got works out there on an independent platform that people are enjoying, maybe I start feeding out the epic through that too.
Nice. Nice. So you have plans to self-publish, build up your platform, and then tackle onto a mainstream publishing?
I mean, look, mainstream publishers and agents all around the world are always looking for material, but they look for what they want, what they need, what they think the market is looking for right now. And I want to write my story. I don't want to write it for a particular market. So sure, you know, I'm already starting to research the sorts of material that various agents are looking for, and but the trouble is that it changes over time. So I'm trying to, you know, spread my bets so that it you know, I do get some stuff out there that I'm proud of and pleased with, and hopefully people like, and then gradually build up enough of a presence that it's not quite so hard to take that through the querying process with a whole bunch of agents.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. Now, I've got a couple of other comments on the Twitter thing. One from Tom Kane, author and blogger, at Tom Bites, or at Tiger Bites, actually, T-I-G-E-R-B-I-T-E-S, who says there are two lessons he's learned in 10 years of being an indie author, both concerning friends and family. I thought this was really interesting, actually. Yeah, it's like never let them read your work before you publish. You will come to doubt their honesty. Second one is never agree to help or take on the role of publisher for their magnum opus. Now, letting your friends and family read your books before you publish. What is your view on that, boys? Caleb?
I mean, friends and family, sure. Why the hell not, man? I mean, yeah. I mean, how would you ever go about, you know, telling the people like, yeah, you know, I got this new thing. And if you can get your friends and family to give a shit about reading your work, first of all, then goddamn, be grateful. I mean, well, what's your alternative? You're going to make them buy the damn book? I mean, holy crap. Most writers I know, they can't get anybody in their family or friends to really sit down and take an interest. You might have one. So, my God, let your friends and family, if they actually want to hear your shit, and God damn, that's the one group of people that, you know, if you, because here's the thing, if you suddenly need $1,500 to publish or get a book cover or something, it's going to be your friends and family you're going to be reaching out to and saying, can you help me out?
I think where he was coming from was, though, that if you were doubting your own work, and I mean, okay, Caleb, you're very, very confident in your own work, and I mean, I love you for it. You're epic. David, very confident in his work. Me, okay. I sit there, 15 books into it. I've had 7 of them hit number ones. All of them have hit in the top 10. And I still go, oh God, is it good enough? Because I doubt my own work. So when I sit there, from where he's coming from, if I had, you know, a treasured friend or family member who read it and went, oh, Cintra, that's just shit. I'm going to crumble. I'm going to buy a tub of ice cream and hide in the corner and probably never write again.
But equally, how often are your real friends and family going to say, oh, that's shit, you should stop now? The point that I think this he was making, Tom was saying, was like, you come to doubt their honesty. I've shown some of my stuff to friends, and I've shown some of my stuff even to family members. And what I get back is, oh, that's really good. So you do, you start to doubt, you know, either it's not their thing and they're just trying to be nice to
you. Well, you wouldn't use friends and family for, you know, for marketable feedback, first of all. You know, that's a conflict of interest right off the bat. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, unless you have a cousin or somebody who is also a writer and they get it, then yeah, you can have that. But no, you cannot have the ones who love you and want to see you be happy, because it's going to be very rare that they do give you negative feedback. And then, yes, when they do, it's going to fucking crush your soul. But then, and you're going to forget the fact that this isn't a professional critic or reviewer that's crushing your soul. This is a fucking layman. This is a, you know, this is just your friend that reads. Their opinion, while it is valid to them and their decisions and what they want to buy and not, it's not necessarily a reflection of, you know, composition and writing capabilities in the creative or technical aspect. So I would say, if you want your friends and family to read stuff, let them read it and just say, hey, save all your fucking feedback until after I get a book deal signed, and then you can tell me whatever the hell you want. But until then, just read the damn story and enjoy it and be glad you're getting a freak out.
That's right.
Yeah, you're not treating them as crit partners or beaters. They're just friends. Hey, yeah, want to read it? Please do.
Absolutely. That's now, great. Joe Clark at joeclark_343 says, once we've decided the difference between traditional publishing or self-publishing, in his honest opinion, IMO, traditional publishing is a sinkhole. And self-publishing, you need an editor, book cover designer, depending on who you are, perhaps interior, say your formatters. Now, I've got a few friends who actually say very similar things, that, you know, as time has progressed and indie authors have stepped forward and now occupy a large portion of the book market, traditional publishing is really not that powerful. And again, it probably depends on where your social platform is or where your fan base is. Once you have a good fan base started, the attraction of traditional publishing is very little, because you already have that snowball happening.
They're two distinctly different. They're two distinctly different devices as well. The only similarity between the traditionally published book and the independent published book is the book itself. That, beyond that, the similarities start to taper off very, very quickly. And I mean, you know, his comment kind of sounds like he's saying you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, which of course is like, well, shit. I mean, of course there's pros and cons to everything. Is traditional publishing falling off? What is going to happen, I believe, is that the bargaining power that is currently in the hands of the publishing companies is going to start to shift to more of an even, kind of share between the author and the publisher. Because, you know, once people realize that there's more outlets out there, once the big companies start seeing a big drop, you know, they might say, holy shit, you know, we need to rethink the way we go about doing things. The big difference, though, with traditional publishing is that it does have a proven formula that it relies on, whereas indie, the big thing that we have to deal with is the fact that I love the fact that KDP, it gets you on there and it's no out-of-pocket cost. You get your book on there and people can buy it and everything else. Of course, here's the thing, you know, a point we made earlier about, you know, these vanity joints is that you shouldn't expect the writer to also try to take part in the publishing and try to take part in other aspects. The benefit with traditional publishing there is that the writer is allowed to be the writer, the editor is the editor, the marketer is the marketer, and everybody stays in their lane, and it works. You know, it works very well. With indie, you came up with a great technique to get your books out there. You mastered the Twitter queen bee role, and people love you for it. You know, you have the witch out there who we had on the show. She found a great way to put her book out there with the witch character and everything else. But you guys are more or less the exceptions and not so much the rule, because for every Centra Sullivan and for every the witch, there's a million other folks on Twitter chat, you know, clamoring out there all day, you know, hey, can anybody take a look at my book? And none of us know how to market. Just because we know how to get on Facebook does not necessarily mean we know the do's and don'ts. It's so technical. You got to know what time to tweet. And essentially, you've probably researched this because you're so good at this. But there are times of the day that when your tweet will get the most impressions, things like that. There's a whole science behind it. What days have the best, whatever. And are you trying to be a writer? Are you trying to be a social media marketer? Are you trying to be a publicist? And that's the one thing where I think is keeping the indie author, you know, still kind of in the shadow of the traditionally published author, only because we don't have a formula, you know, and we don't have anybody that we can reach out to when things aren't working out. If I sell my manuscript to a book company and they say, we got you, and they promise they're going to get me in Barnes and Nobles by this date, and I go down there and the books aren't there, whatever, I can call them and say, hey, what's up? And it's their job to fix it. As opposed to when I got somebody who DMs me and goes, hey, your Amazon book link is not working. And it's like, shit, now I have to figure this out. I don't have anybody I can call for this.
But then surely.
Go ahead, Diff.
Just picking up on that. So really, to be truly independent, you're self-reliant, sure. You're relying on friends and family for advice. You're reaching out to the writing community with questions and ideas. You do your own research. It all comes off your own back. And so having a view of your own worth and the worth of your work in particular, because it's hard to separate, you know, the stuff that I write from who I am. And they are distinct and separate, just because if people don't like something I put out on Twitter, that doesn't mean they do or don't like me. And keeping those separate can be an interesting challenge. But as an indie, having to do all these things, it's harder to have an objective view of, is my stuff any good? At least if you go to a traditional publisher and get an agent who looks at your work, yes, they'll like it or they won't. They'll think it will. They can do something with it or not. But they give you that view on what it's worth without you having to constantly, as an independent, review it and challenge it, and is it as good as I think it is? Because you've got to reach a point where you just have to get it out there and believe that it is as good as it can be, and then you stop thinking about its worth connected to you as an individual, and it becomes the value that other people place on it because they download it and they review it and they tell you on Goodreads that it's
really cool. Well, I'm gonna disagree because You pitch it to an agent. I mean, I've got one that's queer. I'm querying the crap out of this book at the moment. And, you know, you pitch it to an agent. It's their opinion. It is a human's opinion on what will sell or what won't sell, or their view of its worth at that particular point in time. It does not deem it being brilliant. It doesn't. It just because, you know, they've got letters after their name does not deem them a viable dictator of my book's worth. That's my job. And as an indie, you're very right, Caleb. I research the shit out of everything that I do. To a minute, I know when to be posting, what to be posting, what gives me the best traction.
I can tell. You are a guru on the Twitter.
Every comment, every like, every interaction that you get brings up algorithms. People, marketing your book becomes an algorithm challenge. You need your algorithms to link up so that when you do put out your book, your cover, your book news, you know, because I can put out a post that says something, you know, something crude and get, you know, 300 likes on it, and you put out something about a book and you get two and you think, oh, what the fuck? But the more you can get your algorithms linked up, then the more Twitter goes, oh, or Facebook or Insta or whatever, oh, people want to see you, so we'll put you in more people's view because you're getting traction, you're getting interaction. So finding out what works is the only way, if as an indie publisher, to build your platform. You have to have a platform. You have to spend the time, and that gives you complete control. So every error that I make, every fault that I have, every fuck up that I do, I can only blame me. I don't get to go to a publisher and go, you fucked up that Amazon link. It's not working. Oh, no, I did it. I've got to go fix it. Not that hard to do. You just have to learn how to do it. There are plenty of people that you can go and ask. I'm one of them. Rock up in my DM. Chuck me a line going, holy fuck, Cintra, what do I do?
Boy, look, if everybody had a Cintra Sullivan out there, we'd all
you
be.
Do.
If, you we'd do. All be. We'd all be millionaires.
You all do. I'm here. I'm not a guru. I'm certainly not the queen of nothing. I'm just battling like everybody else does the same. Now I'm gonna cut it here, boys. We're gonna come back after our author interview. Of course, we've got the fabulous Dr. Maggie G. I got to do her solo. I know that sounds kinky, and I'm still gonna leave it. Her book, How to Make Sure Your Life Doesn't Suck. I'm gonna roll it over. Let's see what Maggie's got to tell ya. Be back soon. Hi, bookers. We are now going to be one of my favorite parts of our weekly show is our author interviews. I love meeting new authors, introducing new faces and new names to the community, people that I know of because I've seen, but maybe you haven't. And this is a way that we can showcase and lift up and elevate other authors in our community. It's just a way of getting seen, isn't it? So it's just me today. I am doing a solo interview. I'm feeling very powerful within the podcast What the Book community, but here we go. I have Dr. Maggie G with me today. Hi, Maggie.
Hi.
Do I call you Dr. Maggie or just Maggie?
Oh, no, please, just Maggie. Thank you so much.
I am fascinated by you. Your energy on the Twitter feed is palpable. I love it. When I see your post come up on my feed, it's like an energy that ripples off it, and I can't help but take notice. And I see a lot of feedback and a lot of interaction on your post. So obviously it's working with a lot of people. And even just speaking to you now, I can feel it. You're a palpable.
Thank you so much.
I love it. I love it. When did you discover your love for writing?
Well, so that's an interesting question, actually, because I, by the way, thank you again so much for what you just said. That is really amazing. It makes me very happy, and coming from you in particular is just great. So back to the question. It's actually interesting in that I, it's going to be weird, but I really don't consider myself a writer.
Right.
And I have these really weird preconceived ideas about, you know, who can call themselves a writer. And I, you know, people who like have incredible imagination and create these characters in their heads and like, you know, usually have been either compelled to write their entire lives or like, you know, it's just a big part of their lives. And it's never been the case in my case, you know?
Right.
So I never considered myself a writer. I never wanted to write, you know, at any point in my life. I've never thought, oh, it would be amazing to be a writer one day or even write a book or something like that. It really came to me only probably 4 years ago when I just felt compelled to share my story and to share the kind of things that really completely fundamentally changed the way I see life and allowed me to experience a bit more well-being regardless of what is going on around me, you know? And even then I really struggled because of that, because I thought, I really want to tell that story. I really want to share these things, but I'm not a writer, you know? So I had to grapple with it for a while because it was almost as if like, who do you think you are to think that you can write a book, you know? So it took me actually a while to first just get over this idea and realize that I have these preconceived ideas that are actually blocking me from sharing what I wanted to share. And then it was about finding my own authentic voice that took a while as well. So what that meant to me was basically writing without filters. And I knew very early on that I was either going to write honestly and authentically, or I would never write that book at all. So I
completely get where you're coming from, because mm-hmm. I say that I'm a writer, and yet I get where you mean that I mm-hmm. don't necessarily consider myself a writer, because to me, a writer, you know, plots out their stories and they design these characters.
Right.
Fabulous, you know, detailed stories before they even sit down at a computer. And I don't. I sit quietly and I just mm-hmm. listen, and the voices tell me what to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't actually consider myself a writer. I consider myself more of a channeler of stories. I don't know. It's odd. But I understand there's a preconceived idea to what a writer or author or wordsmith or whatever that can go along with that. Now, on your profile, you say that you, I can make sure I get the right word, transformative coach.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Is that part of the book that, because it's How to Make Your Life. Oh, no, sorry, let me make sure I get it right. How to Make Sure Your Life Doesn't Suck. That's where I am buying this book.
Z, I'm gonna post you the freaking book, honestly. Like, please don't buy it. I actually was going to suggest it like ages ago, but yeah.
The title alone, How to Make Sure Your Life Doesn't Suck. We all need this. Bookies, listeners, buy the damn book. We don't need our lives to suck. All right, so tell me, being the transformative coach and the mm-hmm. story, tell me about it. What brought about this story to you?
Right. So first of all, what do I mean by transformative coach? Basically, you know, there's like loads of coaches out there that, you know, you have business coaches, you have performance coaches, you have, you know, there's all sorts. I personally don't like either of the terms because, you know, whenever I think coach, I think football coach. You know what I mean? I don't know why.
I think exercise, and I go, oh, I don't do exercise. Why not?
And so what I mean by transformative is that basically, normally people go to a specific type of coach for a specific reason or to work on a specific area, okay, which is perfectly fine. Whereas transformative coach is someone who I basically share with people a completely fundamentally different way of looking at our feelings and emotions and where they actually come from. And when the penny drops and people really get an insight and really understand on a deeper level how that works, and that happens, you know, in different times to different people and so on and so forth, you know, then really their whole entire outlook on their lives changes. So it's not that it changes just in reference to this one particular area. It changes across the board, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
Does it make any? Yeah, okay, I'm glad. Because it's basically once their outlook changes, it changes in reference to all kinds of things and not just this one specific area. Basically, you know, I talk in the book about how my perspective of life has been changing over the years and how I came across this perspective called the inside-out view of reality or the inside-out perspective. And basically, it boils down to showing people how our experience, how we experience anything, how we feel about literally anything in life comes from within, comes from our thoughts, whether we are aware of it or not, you know? And for me, you know, it was a completely new thing that I found very challenging at first when I first came across it. And it takes a while to, you know, and a lot of open mind and curiosity to actually learn about it and to open up to this new way of looking at life and ourselves and stuff like that. So it's a bit of a spiritual theme, but this is why it took me ages to find a language that everybody can relate to. Because I don't know if you've ever read books of like a spiritual nature. You know, they are often full of that kind of language that I believe most people can't relate to. Okay. And it's sort of, I don't really know how to explain it properly, but I always felt like I kind of get what those books were saying, but I couldn't really. That it was only like that kind of understanding that was reserved to people who do like yoga and do these spiritual practices, and it's all very complicated and stuff like that.
I read a few where I wanted to say, hey, can you just dumb it down for me just a wee bit? Because you know,
correct. correct. And I am really, you know, I believe in simplicity, you know, I believe absolutely. That even the most complex concepts can be explained in a very simple language. And in fact, this is how I recognize how well someone knows things, because the more they know about stuff, the more simple language they use to explain it. That's my experience, you know. They don't need to
also look at it this way, that the more the simpler words or the simpler explanation that you can bring of it, the more encompassing or engulfing you are of people. That the greater the understanding is for the wider population, instead absolutely. Of narrowing it just to the people who understand what the language is.
Absolutely. And so, you know, it was 3 years ago, I think, because I'm incredibly passionate about helping young people, young adults in particular, you know, university students, to design meaningful lives, you know, to create their own idea of success, as opposed to sucking into those still prevailing, you know, cultural, social ideas of what success is, which is, you know, the typical money, fame, you know, very kind of superficial idea of what success is. And I always encourage them to create their own idea of success, to find what's meaningful to them and just screw the rest. It doesn't matter, you know, how what people expect of them and stuff like that. So, but also their mental health has been something very, very important to me. So I decided to create these sort of two workshops for them. And I basically wanted to test drive and see whether what I've been, you know, sharing with adults for years will work for them. And actually, that was the most important point in my life, because I realized that I finally found the language that they could resonate with, these young people. And it really made a huge difference, the stuff that I was sharing with them, to their mental health and to their well-being. So that was important, because that's, it was thanks to them that I decided to write that book. They actually pushed me to write a book, and that title was pretty much created by them, because one of the students came to me and said, so you're basically telling us and teaching us how to make sure our lives don't suck.
I love it. You know what, though? The title in itself makes me stop and go, I want the fucking book. I love it. Just because it's, you know, and it's funny how titles come about. I have a book called Fucked If I Know, because I was brainstorming with a group of friends, and I'm like, should I write a new dragon one, or should I write a new this one or that one, or should I just write, I don't know, Fucked If I Know? And they all went, that one. And I'm like, but it wasn't a book. And they go, no, that's the book. And I'm thinking, what's the book? I don't know. But it ended up being a great book. It's one of my bestsellers. So it's funny how titles come about. But that title itself is very eye-catching. And if you mix that title the cover is beautiful with the energy that you resonate on your feed, you're just like a little diamond of success. I tell you, it's beautiful. Oh my God. Now, so your inspiration then comes from the college students primarily?
So that they definitely inspired me to write that book, because I knew that if they can understand what I'm talking about as young adults, then anyone can.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Absolutely.
Regardless of the age. And in fact, I'm telling you, I am shocked how many people in their late 60s or late 50s, you know, also read my book, because I thought that that title won't speak to them. You know what I mean? Like they will...
That title speaks to everyone, Maggie. It's
right?
A universal title. I mean, honestly, it's we all want it. We look at it and go, yeah. Oh, please, yeah. Please make my life not suck. Please.
Yeah.
Dr. Maggie, fix it. You know?
But you know what makes me most happy, Z, is that actually a lot of people who are totally not into self-help books buy that book. I love that because they're skeptical, you know, because they maybe had some bad experiences with certain self-help books, you know, and stuff like that. So I remember one of my favorite reviews said something like, this is not your typical blah, blah, blah kind of self-help book.
Well, honestly, they'd only have to read your feed to know that you're not your typical self-help person. To me, you're very down to earth. And so I read your texts and your feed and how you interact with your followers and interact with me and everybody else.
Yeah.
And I sit there and go, oh, I get her. Oh, yeah, yeah, no, I get her. Because it's such an authentic voice that you have that comes across very clearly. And it drew me to you, and you know.
But that's the very same reason I've been attracted to your profile on Twitter for, you know, a long time, because when you say like who inspires you, it's people like you, because I honestly I am absolute sucker when it comes to like unfiltered humanness, when people are sort of you know, unapologetically themselves without being assholes, obviously. You know what I mean? Because
that's me. Not the asshole bit. Not the asshole bit. Well, I try not to be, but you know.
Yeah, minus the asshole bit. Although minus I can totally be an asshole.
Although I did put up the picture of the tenderloin, which seems to be getting a little bit of a little bit of feedback on that one, but still not assholey, just a wee bit cheeky. I'm sorry.
I couldn't sleep because of that one, Z.
It was a great picture. And you know, I was sitting there going, all right, people, don't panic. It's a tenderloin. It's a tenderloin.
Oh, my God.
Still got
Do you know what I say? I posted a picture of these, like, it was like plastic egg cups that looked like vibrators.
Ah, yes.
I don't know if you remember. And I said, you know, I remember I said, I am not responsible for where people's minds wander.
Absolutely. It's not my fault that they saw a penis instead of a tenderloin. It is not my fault.
That's right.
I'm not responsible for that. As long as they got a laugh out of it, then their life didn't suck on that day. See?
Absolutely. Perfect.
So we're all in ISO at the moment, of course. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of authors that are struggling at the moment. If you gave mm-hmm. them one piece of advice, what would you give them at the moment, being a transformative coach and trying to make their day not suck today?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What piece of advice would you give them? I know this isn't on my question list. I just want to throw it in.
That's okay. No. It's absolutely fine. So this would be my advice to everyone, including myself, okay?
Right.
Which is that it's incredibly important to stay as present as you possibly can, okay? And mm-hmm. what I mean by that is to really become a bit more aware when you start going in your head. And because we have that tendency where basically we don't even realize how we have this one thought that creates anxiety. And then we start dwelling on that thought, okay? And then from that thought, we have even more thoughts that are incredibly unhelpful, okay? And this is how we create like what I call like a, you know, total shitstorm in our heads, right?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of us out there at the moment caught up in a shitstorm of ISO.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely. But this is what I'm saying, you know, it's really it's not so much what to do, it's about being a bit more aware so you can bring your attention to present moment and really focus on, your only question should be, what can I do right here with what I have right now? And really be also aware of like what is actually completely out of control or your control and what is. It's very important because we tend to focus on things that we have absolutely zero control over. And yet it occupies so much space in our heads thinking about the future and the possible scenarios. And then we freak ourselves out, you know? So it's incredibly important to just focus on whatever it is that you're doing that is right in front of you, like literally like 1 minute at a time, 1 hour at a time. It's very, very important. And honestly, stop watching freaking news.
People, it is right? Atrocious. It is so poisonous to our souls at the moment. I mean, I get it. There is some shitstorm going on out there, but it's, as you said, it's stuff we cannot control right now.
Yeah. And it's not, and you know, Z, it's not about denial. All I'm saying is like, please make sure that you distinguish facts from fear mongering. It's so important because if I watch news, I watch news for information. I just want an update. I want to know, is there anything new that I need to know in terms of like the measures that I need to take and stuff like that?
Yeah. But I won't stay and turn it off.
Right. But I won't be sitting and listening to commentary, which often is so incredibly fear-based and people digging for problems when there aren't any and blowing things out of proportion. That's the part everybody should avoid in particular these days, you know?
Absolutely. Dr. Maggie, you are now going to be my new guru that I come
to. Oh, no, don't call me guru.
I think that advice in itself, focus on the now, as in the next hour, the next minute, today, not tomorrow, not a week from now, not a month from now. What are you doing today to help yourself, to clear your mind? Yep. Even if it's just pouring a bubble bath with a glass of wine, go take half an hour out, people, and just zone out of this world. Your mind will love you for it. Your writing will love you for it. And the world will feel better to you after it. Ah, am I getting it right, Dr. Maggie?
Absolutely, Z.
Yes. And how to make your life how to make sure your life doesn't suck is a book we all need to buy.
Thank you.
Where can they find you, Maggie? Where can our readers or listeners find you?
So, basically Twitter is my second home.
We love
it. And then I have a website, www.drmaggieg.com. And that's the G bit comes from the fact that most people have real trouble actually pronouncing my last name, which is completely understandable. And also, where else can I, where else am I? Oh, the book is available. The book is available on Amazon, yes.
Amazon, absolutely. And Dr. Maggie G is your Twitter handle, yes?
Yes.
Absolutely. And we will stalk her, listeners. Get on board. She is a fantastic Twitterer to follow. She follows back as long as you're decent and, you know, no creepy people.
And fun. Yeah.
We don't do no creepers.
No, we don't.
One last question before I go. Mm-hmm. When this ISO lifts, Maggie, what is the first thing that you want to do?
I want to travel ASAP.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, you were going to travel. We were going to book an interview a couple of weeks ago, and you were just about to travel before everything got locked down.
Exactly. Yeah. So
I just want to hug somebody. I want to go around. I'm going to be like this weird octopus, and everybody I see, I'm going to be like, hug.
Oh my God. I wish I was there. I would be hugging you continuously if you are short of those.
Hugger. I love it.
Me too.
I'm feeling a wee bit jittery for not having enough hugs.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Where are you going to when you leave? When your first travel? Where do you want to go? Back to America? Is that
where
you're
to? That will be the first place to go. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully ISO will lift. Oh, it'll probably be a little
hopefully.
Bit.
Hopefully.
We're living in the day, Maggie. We're living
absolutely.
In the day.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure speaking to you. I hope the listeners stalk you and find you and buy your book, How to Make Sure Your Life Doesn't Suck, bound to be a keeper. I am definitely grabbing it.
Thank you so much, Z.
I appreciate your time.
It was brilliant.
I'll see you back on the Twitter feed.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome back from our author interview with Dr. Maggie G. I had such a fun time talking to her. I tell you what, her energy, boys, you should have been in on the video, on the interview. Her energy is palpable. You could feel it rippling through the phone. She is just one delicious, beautiful soul, and everybody should stalk her. Totally. Just love her. Love her. Squeeze her. Squeeze her a lot. No.
Is she the kind of doctor that writes prescriptions, or is she kind of the kind of doctor who practices philosophy?
Philosophy?
Oh,
she's
well.
She's all about making you a better person.
So she can't get me Vicodin, in other words.
Pardon?
So she can't get me Vicodin, then, is what you're saying.
No, I don't think so. But I'm willing to talk to her about it. Dr. Maggie Techni, DM. All right, so we quite often do Tweets of the Week, which I really enjoy. And was one that I saw today that really related to what we were talking about earlier. And this is from Noville, which her, dagnabbit, her...
At Livon?
Yes. It's only pulled up the little part with the L-Y. So is it I-Y? I-Y?
L-Y.
L-Y. At L-Y. And what's the last part? Because I don't have...
V-O-N.
That's L-Y-V-O-N. I love her. She's gorgeous and one of the best artists that I've seen. Now, her tip, pro tip for new writers. This to me is golden rule number one. Focus on finishing writing the book first and foremost. Do not get distracted by the publishing process, as it will take you down a rabbit hole there is no escaping from. Focus and finish that book. Now, I used to have a hashtag that people used to use a lot of, and I believe I may be bringing it back, which is just write the fucking book. You can't do anything until the book is finished. It doesn't matter what publishing want, whether you want to go trad, whether you want to go vanity, whether you want to go self-indie, whatever. It doesn't matter until you have a book. So finish the book, get it edited, get it queried, whatever. Then you can start worrying about what you're going to do with it. Until it's finished, it is pointless. You're wasting your time.
And yet I think a lot of us do get sucked into the rereading, and you start editing before you've even finished your first draft.
Yeah.
And starting to stress about, oh, you know, is this good enough? Is it? But just finish writing the story from beginning to end. Then everything else can happen. This sounds like great advice.
It is the most golden rule of anything, is finish the book first.
Have story will travel. You got to have it. Absolutely.
Got to have it. You can't sell what you haven't got. A publisher, if you want to go trad publishing, they're not going to look at you unless you've got the book finished. And even in a trad publish, this is something that people don't actually understand, is that you've got to still have it edited before it goes to them. To query your book, it has to be edited. Then they will re-edit it to suit their needs if they accept it. But it still has to be edited. You can't send a first draft to a publishing agent that's, you know, got grammar up the shit wazoo. It doesn't work like that.
They're not going to fix it for you. And they're not going to look at it and go, oh, this is your first book? Gotcha. No, they're going to look at it and go, well, hey, guess what? Here's your first lesson. You know, get this trash cleaned up, and then maybe don't waste our time again.
Exactly. So you still have to edit your book, even if you are going trad, or even if you are wanting to go trad published, you still have to edit. Oh, for God's sake, edit your books, people. I love it. And you don't have, I don't self-edit because I'm shit at it. So that's also knowing your self-worth. I know I can't do that. So I don't. I outsource that one because it works for me. I know other people don't, and that's fine. You know, you have to find the way it works for you. That's all. It's finding your journey, knowing what you're worth. Yeah. What say you, boys?
Who wants to go next with their tweet? Well, I say, as far as that, I say, look, I mean, it goes back to what I talked about earlier. Staying in the lane is what makes for the best creators. Probably a writer should be a writer. An editor should be an editor, because those are two distinctly different skill sets, first of all. That's not to say that some writers can't edit beautifully and that some editors can't write gorgeously. However, the desired result when you sit down to write your novel versus when you sit down to edit a novel, it's very different. A novel you are putting into prose, imagination, and storytelling. Whereas, you know, with editing, you are fixing grammatical mistakes and looking for things. It's very technical. It's that, you know, it's the difference between writing a beautiful recipe for, you know, a gorgeous duck à l'orange versus being the one that actually has to gut the duck and, you know, go out and source all the stuff. It's not the same thing at all. And the what makes it dangerous, I think, to a lot of writers who have to edit, is that editing is not part of the creative process with writing. It's kind of counterintuitive to creativity when a lot of it is about removing elements that you wanted to tell in your story. And it's a huge point of discouragement. It's kind of like, you know, if you loved this restaurant, you love the food they serve there, but if in order to get into there, you had to crawl through the goddamn trash every time, and you just don't want to do it. It's like, I love the food, but I got to crawl through the dumpster if I want to eat the meal. And I'm just not interested in that dumpster part. I'm sorry. And
see, self-editing, you see people that go, oh, I'm still editing chapter 2, so I can't go on to chapter 3. And I'm like, oh, but that stops my flow. I can't do it. I have to write chapter 1 straight through to the end. And then only when I've typed the end or however you want to end it, will I go back and muck around with it, which I don't often do because I have an editor. But
that's the other thing with editing. Like, how do you actually know? Because as the writer, as the creators, right, we are bringing this stuff out from our imaginations. We're taking raw creativity and putting it into prose, into material format. How would you ever truly know that your book is edited enough as the writer? You know, you have no... you know, you don't have any true objectivity to your own work in that point. And you don't have the ability to look at it in a, you know, in a clinical sense and say, you know, it's like, yeah, this may be your favorite character's trait or whatever. You may love the fact that they sneeze every time they walk into, you know, a boutique, because maybe that's what you did as a kid and you really want that in there. But they see that it's pointless because it adds nothing to the story, but just takes up a whole page about sneezes. And they have the ability to say, that's got to go. And they understand why it's got to go.
And this is why you hear rare, and this is probably, you know, it's an extreme example, but, you know, it might take 10 years to write a book. And I think, 10 years? What the hell are you doing for 10 years? What the hell?
Well, to write a book, you can probably do it very quickly. But as far as, you know, to get it on shelves and published, like, so much of that's not in your hands anymore. And that's when I think what makes indie writing the popular option that it is now is the fact that I know people who have stacks of completed manuscripts and they just cannot find, a market for them. And of
course, so you take the bull by its balls and you fucking do it yourself. People, come on.
I mean, that other option is you would have to self-publish at that point. You know, because eventually the money runs out. I've known people who have taken out loans from the bank to get their manuscripts edited. And all that perfectly edited manuscript means is that it's ready to query. That does not mean that it's going to get picked up. And you're not going to get a refund from that editor. You know, it's not like they're going to say, hey, sorry, you know, we said we were going to do is make it grammatically correct. You know, we didn't say that we were going to get you published.
I love being an indie. I do. I love the control of it. I love being in control of everything that goes on about it. I get to choose my editors. I get to choose my cover designers. I get to choose how it's done and why it's done. And I love it, I must say.
I think the pro to con ratio with that, because you talked about agents earlier and I wanted to touch on that. You said the agent shouldn't be the, you know, almighty, you know, gatekeeper of what is and isn't, you know, going to work. And the one thing that I kind of wanted to point out there, to fairness to the industry, is that an agent is not just somebody who's sitting there saying, yes, it's going to go or no, it's not. They're putting skin in the game. They're putting their own money down for that. So that is, they're not just saying, this is my opinion, this should change, and you have to listen to my opinion, or I'm not going to publish your book, or I'm not going to promote your book to a publisher because I said so. No, it's also the fact that they have to decide between your book and probably 10 others, which one are they going to sink, you know, at the very least, you know, 10,000 or more to get it pushed out there. How much are they willing? How much equity are they going to get from this? They can only choose one. And, you know, so they do have skin in the game. And that benefits the writer in the sense that if things don't go well for you, that means things aren't going well for them. If you're losing money, they're losing money. So they're motivated to say, oh, shit, you know, I have 35% equity in these book sales. Let's see what we can do to fix these problems. They have something to lose, too. We, on the other hand, yeah, we can choose what kind of raft we want to float out in the ocean with. We can choose the oars. We can choose what color to paint it. But if it sinks, we got no Coast Guard to call to come out there and pull us back to land. We is going down.
I go down either way.
The thing an agent has going for them is they generally have been doing this longer than I have. So whilst it is their opinion and it is their experience, you go to an agent because they do have experience of the market and what the publisher is looking for at that point in time. But there's nothing to say that I couldn't self-publish and promote the hell out of stuff that I do and be successful with it. But an agent, it is kind of their job. They are going to get paid to make it happen.
And so people are going to return their phone calls. That's the other thing. I mean, look, I could call a publishing house all day and leave a message with the receptionist or send them emails or at them on Twitter and say, guys, I got this great idea. You got to look at it. I'm never going to hear from them because there's probably 500,000 other authors every day doing the same thing with them. The agent is that guy that when he calls and he goes, hey, Barry, it's Chuck here. Yeah, it's Chuck. Yeah, you know, from Jennifer's thing. Yeah. Hey, I got this great young author here. You're going to love her. She's gorgeous. She's got the sex appeal. She's a spicy Australian. She is just going to, the boys are going to go nuts and the girls are going to want to be her and the men are going to want to meet her and she is going to change the world. And then they go, okay, cool. The last five authors you sent us went on to become bestsellers. So cool. Send her on down. A lot of times that's all it is to have a trusted middle person, because agents also work off their reputations. So if there's
look, I agree completely that they do. They have their reputation and it is their opinion on what they pick up and what they don't pick up. When you're talking about them having invested interest in it, as an indie author, I have every cent invested in this. I'm Scottish. I put money down on something. I am going to work my ass off to make sure I get it back plus more. As an indie author, you have the most invested in it than anybody else, because it all comes down to you. You cannot fall back on anybody else. It is only you standing there at the finish line going, okay, I won, or okay, I fucked up, one or the other.
I want to win. I want to win. I want us all to win.
Well, we all want to be up on that podium, swilling champagne. Mm-mm.
But you should. You publish that damn book. You press publish on that damn book. You open that bottle of champagne. You pop it. You drink it. You celebrate that you published a book, because you damn well did. And that's more than a lot of other people ever get a chance to do, because I don't know about you guys. I have friends that sit there and go, oh, you wrote a book. Ah, I could write a book. I got a book in me. I think I might go write a book. Yeah, you go fucking write a book, Jane. Go for it. I dare you. Go on, let's go. You know, it's not that easy. So publish on that book. You celebrate it, because you cross that finish line and you are a winner, in my view. Oh, I feel so passionate about this. All right, let's tweet of the week. What's your tweet of the week, David?
Well, I'm going to do this shameless self-publicity tweet of the week.
This is so exciting.
19 hours ago, the wonderful folks at VSS Pick. So we've talked on a whole bunch of episodes about doing the daily VSS, the VSS 365, writing short stories. This has morphed, and these guys are putting out a picture of the week to inspire you to write a story. And some weird chap at Kung Fu Panda persuaded them to use one of his photos, and that's this week's tweet. So if you look for either at VSS Pick or even hashtag VSS Pick, this week's photo, see what you can come up with, and even tell me where it was taken.
Is that weird Brit guy at Kung Fu Panda? Is it the
Brit guy? Some expat. He ran away from the motherland and ended up in some godforsaken, you know, fire torn land down under. Yeah, he seems okay.
Look, you know, he takes bubble baths. I don't know. I don't trust him.
Well, he has a keen eye behind the camera lens, I'll tell you that.
Oh, man.
That's my alter ego is a photographer.
Yeah,
yes.
They are breathtaking, utterly breathtaking. You go check out Kung Fu Panda, a.k.a. David Atherton Cooper. His photos are simply divine. Divine. I love them.
Just like his accent. What about yours? It just traps you.
What about yours, Caleb?
All righty. Well, mine comes to us from one of my favorite people on Twitter, Brooklyn Dean, at Lady Brooklyn, and that is Brooklyn, Brooklynn. So it's like Brook is in like a pond or a stream, and then Lynn is in Lynn. So good luck with that. But at Lady Brooklyn, she is absolutely awesome person to know. She has no problem. What do they say over there in the UK, David? What, taking the piss out of somebody? Or how does that one go?
It's a fine tradition, taking the piss. Absolutely.
That's when you basically like tell somebody to stop and, you know, shut the fuck up, right?
It's when you wind them up. And it can be very good humored, or it can just be taking the piss.
Well, Brooklyn Dean takes the big pisses, and she gives some great advice. And so y'all check her out, because she said, and I agree with this one so much, writing advice, don't listen to everyone tweeting pieces of writing advice. I love that opening. Writing is art, and as such, it has no rules. I know, Centra, that's a big philosophy of yours. People like to preach and lecture to feel like their work is superior, and shame you if yours isn't like theirs. So true. It's trash.
Oh.
Right. However, listen. Hold on. Look. She summarizes at the end beautifully. Write however the fuck you want. Couldn't agree with her more.
Nice.
Beautiful. God, I couldn't have said it better if it was coming out of my mouth itself.
We should. She should be a future guest for sure. I think. I think.
Yes,
she's
Lady Brooklyn, get her on. Get her on, because I could totally connect with her. We should exactly do that. Writing advice is exactly that advice. Take it or leave it. Stay true to yourself. There are no rules. I hate conformity in art.
So let's try to approach this like let's try something new, Centra and David. Then.
All right.
Because every time people look at shit advice, you know, that's floating around out there, we always put the fucking burden on the writer. Just like you just said, don't listen to, you know, write your way. Why don't we put the fucking burden on the people giving this shitty advice and just say, look, stop telling people how to fucking write your way. Why don't you try to learn how to give useful advice, actionable advice? How about this? Stop being an asshole. The internet, the biggest problem with social media, and it hits us because in the office we need it, is that the people who are on the receiving end of the assholes are the ones who are handed the burden of responsibility. Don't feed the trolls. Don't engage. You should have expected that if you went on the internet. At no point does anybody ever just look at the fucking assholes who are instigating and antagonizing it and say, hey, why don't you try to not be a piece of shit? So that's my challenge out there, guys. If you want your words to have value, then make sure you are speaking valuable words.
Ooh, I like that, Caleb.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, wise. And did you stroke your beard when you were saying that? Was it just like,
I'm stroking my ego as I'm saying it as always.
I like it. We should only speak valuable words to each other. That would be a nice outlook on the world if that happened.
Yeah. And don't stand behind your words, stand in front of them.
Oh, I like that.
Ooh.
So yeah.
We're doing good tonight.
It's
yeah.
not
really. Yeah.
Well, is that so that if they bite you in the ass, it's your ass that get bitten first?
Yes.
Oh, I yeah. like it.
you stand up and be counted if I express an opinion. And I frequently do. That is my opinion, and I will stand in front of that opinion. And people can take pot shots at me if they don't agree with it. Sure, but don't be a troll who, you know, snivels and pouts and doesn't get outside and just goes about things they don't like without being able to stand up and defend those opinions with good, valuable, real words and insight.
Look,
absolutely.
Perked up my opinion yesterday, one of them, about writing women. And I got some interesting DMs about that, about how I was damaging feminism and womankind. And I went, oh, that's nice. Excellent. Because I had the audacity to say that women come in all shapes, sizes, and strengths, and we shouldn't have to always write a strong woman because they're not all strong. Women come in all shapes, all types, all whatever. If I want to write a woman that's weak, I will write a woman that's weak because it happens. I don't get to dictate this with my characters. If I want to write a strong woman, I will write a strong woman. If I want to write a weak man, I'll write a weak man. Same, same. So, you know, I got a little bit hounded in a DM over that one. But I still stand by my words. Anyway, how'd you do?
There you go. Yeah. You should. That's the most important thing. If you can stand by your words at the end, then there you have it.
Oh, I don't put out any words I don't mean.
Yeah, and every character, look, characters should have flaws.
Absolutely.
Characters may be based on real people. They may even be real people. But yeah, if a character is flat, one-dimensional, yeah, maybe a walk-on to serve a purpose in a scene, but it's kind of contrived. Your characters are your characters, and if they happen to be strong or weak or moral or ethically bankrupt,
that's it.
That is also interesting. Then surely there's no wrong way to write a character.
Exactly. And I said the only thing that I concentrate on is that my characters are well developed, fully rounded, and
able to buy a drink at the bar.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, all right, guys. Now we at What the Book podcast are starting something new, bookers. I really want you to pay attention to this because it's going to help you. It's about self-worth. It's about helping other authors. We at What the Book want to start doing shout-outs. Shout-outs. I love this idea. Thank you to Caleb for bringing it into the podcast. What the Book world.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for listening.
Well, how about you? You pitch it.
Sure.
Go on, you go first.
I'll make this real quite simple for what we do here. All right. So when we talk about the shout outs, we're talking about video shout outs. That's exciting, right? So if it gets retweeted, you know, and things like that, guess what? People tend to kind of stop for the videos on Twitter more than they just stop for the big retweet threads and all that kind of stuff. So boom, right there. So here's how it works. You're the author out there, and let's say you got something that you just need to get a little bit more light on. It can be your website. It can be your book. It can be your blog. It can be anything related to your craft as an artist. Okay? And basically, you hit us up. You follow us at What the Book at WTB Podcast on Twitter. Give us a follow. Get all up in our DMs if you want, or you can email us also on the official podcast email, which we'll give at the end. And tell us a little bit about what we can do for you as far as promoting and spotlighting and shout-outing either yourself, your work, or some component. And we'll take a look at it. Obviously, look, people, I'm going to say this one time because I try not to be too serious around here. But look, if it's something that you know should not be shouted out, don't send it to us. We ain't going to fucking do that. Look, We don't live by, we're pretty loose and easy here, but I'm telling you, if it gets me to stop and go, whoa, I can't say that, then you've probably crossed a lot of lines. So use your head, folks. You know, we're trying to be an extension of you. So, you know, send out things that you would want to be flown proudly for all to see. All right, so that's step one. Step number two, and you're going to get a little sample here in a second. But step two is you get to pick which one of us that you want, and maybe we could all do one together for somebody, maybe possible, but we all kind of live, like, especially me, we're in separate hemispheres, folks. So it's a lot easier. Pick your favorite host. You know,
favorite host. People, right. Bookies, you know who it is.
Pick Centra, absolutely, and or David, one of the two.
Because two of us live in the future, and one of us lives in the past.
Two of you are talented.
You got to make
two of you are very talented, and one of them is me, and one of you is me. So, I mean, you know, hey, guys, that's the thing. So, give that. But if you want to make my day, then you can also pick me. You give us an idea what you want us to say. You give us the points, because we're going to run with it. This isn't us just reading a script. Look, that's fucking amateur hour right there. We're going to look at what you got, and we're going to summarize it up real nice. Now, obviously, if there's any kind of things that you really want to make sure are said or not said, if there's something that you don't want to give us too much of a leash on, then let us know and we'll respect
that. Okay, so this is like an under 2 minute video that we will do, and we will post on What the Book Podcast, WTB Podcast. Plus, we will also share it on each of our pages. So you get three of us sharing, no matter who you choose. So if you choose me,
we will indeed.
If you choose me, which, come on, bookies, you know you want to, because, you know, I'll do it with filters and everything. I'm all good. Then the boys will share it as well. So you get all of our network involved in that. So it's an under 2 minute video. Now, this is also, it could be your stuff or authors support authors. If you know somebody who's got a book release coming up that, you know, you want to help them, give them a little woo-woo time, tell us about them, let us approach them, because we can't do it without their okay, and we can get them involved too and give them a shout out. Yeah, so, you know, it's all about authors, helping yourselves, using us to help you. We're here to help at What's Book Podcast.
I love it.
So what are we going to pitch? Are we going to pitch ourselves?
Yeah, okay, yeah. I think we could do that and kind of just give a little example of what we bring to the table, you know, a little quick promo, sure.
All right, Caleb, give me 30 seconds as to why the people should pick you.
Wait, who's on? There's a lot of static popping in my ear. Did you say
Caleb?
Oh, me first. Okay, here we go. First is the worst. All right. All right, so check it out, guys. Why should you choose me? Why should you pick me? I mean, obviously, look, you get one opportunity a day to make a good decision, and I'm making it so easy for you. I'm telling you what that right decision is. All right, pick me. Pick the king of schlock, because, look, I ain't afraid to say what needs to be said, all right? I'm a goddamn extrovert. Half of the time, I'm so strung out on caffeine or some other form of stimulant that I'm just looking for things to talk about. But check this out. Get ready. It's going to blow your mind. I'm also quite capable of being articulate and intelligent and plugged into the literary zeitgeist that is the current contemporary writing world. I can speak on the pretty flowery stuff, and I can just always also just be a piece of white trash like I usually am, but I will hype your shit so hard I will make a goddamn fool out of myself if it helps sell one more book for you, because I just like hearing myself talk. It don't matter if it's about your book or mine. It's giving me what I want, and it's giving me what you want. So, if you like to play hot, fast, and loose with your future, reach out to the King of Schlock. You'll be glad you did.
And you've also got the voice, the panty dropper voice. So that's a big plus for you.
That is also true. David, I got the panty dropper.
The panty dropper voice. David, give us 30 seconds why the bookers should choose you.
In 30 seconds, why would you go with the King of Schlock or the Queen of Whiplash from Queensland? You need the voice of authenticity. You need someone who cares, who can be convincing, someone who will look at your stuff and love your stuff and share that love with the world, maybe in poetry, maybe in prose. this is the way you get shouted out to the Booker community, to the world at large. You pick a boy from the motherland who's ended up down under, who's rediscovered a love of beer and good food, who can share your writing, your words, your talent with the Booker community all around the globe.
That sounds so nice.
Beautiful.
All right, my 30
Beautiful.
Seconds. My 30 seconds. You could go King of Schlock. He's got a voice. I get it. You could go Classy David Britt. I get it. He's sexy too. I get it. Or you can just have me. I've got nothing. No, I will deal with you with humor. Humor is my vibe. So expect it to be fun and engaging and probably got a filter involved in it because I'm kind of quirky like that. I will get people noticing me and then, of course, they will notice you because I will be talking about you, your book, your blog, your website, your words. You will be my focus for that two-minute video. There you go. That's all I got. That's it.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. There you have it, your three choices. Look, there is no bad choice out of
no.
Unless you pick me. That's a brave choice if you pick me. I'll tell you that. All right? You'll be an iconoclast if you go with K-Ban and Kellum. But we will bust our ass.
There are no bad choices. We will all do the best of the show.
There's no bad choices, but there is the best choice, and that's me.
Oh, no doubt.
You keep going with that line, lady. That's all cool.
I will. It's all good. I know my self-worth, boys. I know my self-worth.
Which is what this week is all about. It's about knowing it, believing it, and writing the goddamn book and putting it out.
Exactly. What a wonderful way to sum it up. I love it. Write the damn book before you worry about anything that we've talked about today, unless you have a finished book, it is pointless. So write the fucking book, then
get us to shout.
Then contact one of us. I mean, and just DM us. Just DM one of the boys. DM me, whatever.
You should be following all of us anyway. If you're not, what the hell?
What the hell are you doing?
Come on, what are you doing with your life? Come on now.
All right, boys, I think we've come to the end of this podcast. Any 2 seconds worth of hint that you want to give in?
I'll stick with just write the fucking book. And, hey, I will follow that advice.
Good. Caleb?
What am I answering here?
Is there any last little tidbit from the King of Schlock?
Oh, always. Let me see. Shit. Finish the fucking book like David said, and there you go. And follow me on Twitter, and that's it. You'll be good.
And mine is finish the fucking book. So the three of us finish the fucking book. Now, of course, you find all of us are on Twitter. Our handles are all on the What the Book podcast at WTB podcast. Find us, stalk us, DM us. We are here for you. Thanks for joining us, bookers. Thanks, boys.
See you all again soon.